George Bernard Shaw said, make it a rule never to give a child a book you would not read yourself. This hour, the best new children's books for giving this holiday season. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If your kids have made a wish list of something they want, something they need, something to wear, and something to read, today we'll take care of the something to read. We'll find out about the best new books for kids from Kate Rattenberg of Dragonfly Books in Decorah and Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. They've made their lists, including picture books, poetry, nonfiction, chapter books, young adult, and even a classic or two. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you are looking for a special book or two for a special child in your life this holiday season, we have so many ideas for you this hour. It's our annual holiday children's book show. And with me today, Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Welcome back to the show, Barb.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being here. And Kate Rattenberg is here from Dragonfly Books in Decorah. Kate, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
And Dragonfly Books has been open, what, 5 years now?
We'll be 5 years in this coming February.
Wow, that's wonderful. All right, well, you both brought boxes and bags and piles of books. And we're going to start with books for our littlest readers. Barb, you brought a couple of board books. Tell me what you brought.
I brought Close Your Eyes by Kate Banks, which actually was published as a book quite a while ago. But in board book, it is even more adorable. The illustrations are irresistible. Close Your Eyes is a tiger baby, and the mama's trying to get her to go to sleep. So she says, close your eyes, little tiger, and go to sleep. But the little tiger didn't want to sleep. If I close my eyes, he said, I can't see the sky. And it goes on like that. Illustrations are just wonderful. The second one is the Napping House board book. And it occurs to me sometimes that classics that all of us know about, all of a sudden two generations have gone by and nobody knows about them. I have customers in the store who have never heard of the Napping House before.
You have a host of a show who's never heard of the Napping House before. So
there you go. And the Napping House by Don and Audrey Wood was a classic and a darling book about a house that is so quiet. And there are many characters, a grandmother, and everyone is sleeping in the house. And, of course, it's a cumulative tale, and the grandmother's sleeping, and it's cozy, and there's a boy in a flea, and a dog, and a cat. And as the lighting changes throughout, finally the flea bites the cat, and the cat hits the dog, and the whole thing goes chaotic. And finally, the Napping House is not a napping house anymore. It is a house where no one is now sleeping.
Now, we all know houses like that.
Yes, and this one comes out. I'm going to skip to the picture book section because the last thing on the picture book is the full moon at the Napping House. So 30-some years later, they come out with another one that starts in the Napping House where everyone is restless. They can't get to sleep. There's a full moon, and my mother used to say we all howl at the full moon, and that's what's going on in this house. They cannot get to sleep. Sort of like the Napping House, but a new version.
All right. So for board books, you have Close Your Eyes by Kate Banks and the Napping House board book by Audrey Wood, and then another Don and Audrey Wood book, the Full Moon at the Napping House, which
Correct.
Is a picture book. Wonderful. And one of your favorites turned into a board book this year?
That's correct. I absolutely love and adore Tom Lichtenheld's books, Goodnight, Goodnight, Construction Site, and his companion to that, which is Steam Train, Dream Train. And they're out now as board books. And
nice.
So if you have a young one who loves Goodnight, Goodnight, Construction Site, you can't go wrong with picking up the board books for even younger ones to be able to hold in their hands and love and adore.
And chew on it just a little.
Yeah. Exactly. And Tom Lichtenheld has also come out, pairing with Amy Krauss Rosenthal, with a very beautiful children's book this year. Amy Krauss Rosenthal, you might know from her books Little Pea or Plant a Kiss.
Yeah.
And the book that they've collaborated on is called I Wish You More. And it is just a beautiful book about wishes. You know, you have some books that are about a single wish. You have some books about three wishes. Well, this one is wishes for just endless good wishes. Wishes for curiosity and wonder, for friendship and strength, laughter and peace. And I find that this is wonderful for whether you're celebrating a joyous moment in your milestone in your life, sharing words of encouragement. It's a wonderful book for wishes of every age. It doesn't necessarily need to be for a child. It also is wonderful for first-time mothers' anniversaries, too.
One of those picture books that maybe we don't outgrow. I Wish You More by Amy Krauss Rosenthal and illustrated by Tom Lichtenheld. And you want to talk about another picture book, too?
Sure. Another one of my favorite authors, Lauren Long, favorite author illustrators. You may know his books, Otis the Tractor series, where Otis is the tractor and he's meeting new puppies, new friends. There's Otis and the Tornado. Mm. Lauren Long has shifted a little bit with his book this year. It's called Little Tree. Absolutely gorgeously illustrated. It's a powerful story about a young tree who holds tight to his leaves, even as everybody else lets theirs drop. And season after season, Little Tree clings to his brown-leaved self. And then finally, he takes a leap, and he sheds his protection and moves forward in life. And even though he's feeling the harsh cold of winter the first season that he drops his leaf, soon he grows tall and green and finds out letting go is fine.
Oh, nice. Mm. That's beautiful. Little Tree by Lauren Long. And Barb, we'll come back to you.
Well, is it okay to do poetry or do you
sure.
want me to do a picture book? I put Sail Away on. It's poems by Langston Hughes, but art by Ashley Bryant. Some listeners might remember that we had Ashley Bryant visit Iowa City, more than 25 years ago, as our first community author. He is now 91 years old, and this book is so brilliant in design with it's all poetry about the water and the sea. He lives on an island off Maine, and so every poem is illustrated, and it's a collage technique with very, very bright, brilliant colors, and he is a poet worth visiting.
All right. Sail Away, illustrated by
Ashley Bryan.
Ashley Bryan. And it's the poetry of Langston Hughes. Do you have another poetry?
I do. I have Snuggle Up with Mother Goose. This is a small Mother Goose book. I love the Opie editions, but this one is illustrated by Rosemary Wells. And so it's a kind of a good size, her wonderful illustrations.
And you know Rosemary Wells from Max and Ruby.
Max and Ruby.
Her most famous work.
Those are the most fun. And by the way, Rosemary Wells is coming to the Iowa City Public Library on Sunday, December 5th. So that's less than a week from today at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And she's going to talk about her writing and show us pictures of her studio. We'll be selling books from Prairie Lights there. And I love this little Mother Goose. I think if you've got a baby present you're looking for, this is the perfect little one.
All right. Snuggle Up with Mother Goose. And let's go back to you, Kate. What would you like to talk about next?
I'm going to talk about just a fun book called The Little Snowplow. It's by a first-time author, Laura Kaler. She's a children's librarian in Salt Lake City, Utah. And especially on my drive down this morning when I was driving through a little bit of snow, it was fun to see the snowplows out on the road, which made me think again of this book, The Little Snowplow. It is a story about a very tiny snowplow who comes into work, and there's a mighty mountain road crew. The trucks all come in one size, which is big, until the new snowplow joins the crew. As you can expect, you know, he tries to fit in. He's feeling undersized. He keeps working out. He trains hard, pushing loads of gravel, and he pulls blocks of concrete and does plow lifts 10 times every night.
Wow.
Just to get ready. But then a blizzard arrives, and will the little snowplow's training be enough? Mm-hmm. And it's...
I have a guess.
You have a guess. Yes. And it is a book for everybody who loves big engines, small engines, and things that go.
And maybe feels a little too small sometimes, too.
Yes, exactly.
All right. The Little Snowplow by Laura Kohler and Jake Parker. And do you want to talk about another picture book? We'll do two at a time. I think that makes sense.
Okay. I'm going to shift over to a nonfiction title.
Okay.
And I apologize, it's not on the list. It's one of my favorite author-illustrator combination pairs has come out with a new book in their series. It's called A Nest is Noisy. It's by Diane Hutz Ashton, illustrated by Sylvia Long. And they've collaborated on a number of different books together. You might be familiar with Butterfly is Patient, Seed is Sleepy, Egg is Quiet. What I love about her books is there is a phrase of text, very minimal text on every page, and so you can read it to your youngest readers, very, very rich in nature, very detailed images that the kids get caught up in, and then there's more detail, so as the child gets older, you can go delve in depth into the topic. A Nest is Noisy is about nests of all different kinds and all the children that are within it.
Oh, fun. A Nest is Noisy. And Barb, we'll go back to you.
I'm going to do Northwoods Girl. This has a little connection to us. The author is Amy Bissonette. She's from Minneapolis. The illustrations are by our local Claudia McGeehee. And the most wonderful thing, of course, I'm very attached to the Northwoods myself, so I welcome this book. But it's a granddaughter who comes to visit her grandmother through the seasons, and she says about her grandmother, "My grandmother says she's not a good-looking woman. I don't know. She looks pretty good to me. She is not like other grandmas, it's true. She's bony, and she dresses in grandma's old flannel shirts." And every season they do something different, but hiking is always a part of their day. And by the very end, her mother wants grandma to move into the city. And grandma says, "I'm staying put." And she's got everything all worked up and knows that she can get her snow plowed. And she's just right where she wants to be. And it ends with, "Someday I hope to be just like her." So it's a wonderful testament to grandmothers, beautifully illustrated, and in a wonderful region of the country.
All right. Northwoods Girl, Amy Bissonette and Claudia McGeehee. And, of course, that wonderful scratchboard illustration that Claudia specializes in. And we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the best new books for children this holiday season. We've talked about some board books and some picture books, and we'll go on. We'll talk about transitional books and chapter books, books even for young adults. And, of course, this list will go up on our website later today, iowapublicradio.org. But keep listening. We've got more picks from Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kate Rattenborg of Dragonfly Books in Decorah. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our annual show about books for kids, the best new books for kids this holiday season. And with me, Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kate Rattenborg of Dragonfly Books in Decorah. We've been talking so far about picture books, and I know you both have some more beautiful, beautiful picture books to share. So let's talk about a few more of them. And Barb, I'll let you have another go, and then we'll go over to you, Kate.
I'm going to talk about Jan Brett's new book, The Turnip. One reason is she also is coming to Iowa next Sunday, and she will be at the Davenport Public Library at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Wow, next Sunday.
Next Sunday.
And I need to point out, next Sunday is December 6th.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm glad
so
you reminded
Rosemary
me of that.
Rosemary Wells will be in Iowa City, and Jan Brett will be in Davenport next Sunday.
Well, Jan Brett, as many of you know, does very detailed borders with much to look at and then the story in the middle of the page. In this one, she's taken the Russian folktale. She and her husband were traveling in Russia in 2011, and they were driving by a farm, and there was that little carved wooden toy of three people with a bear struggling to pull up the large turnip. And it just tickled her fancy, so she said, "I'm going to do a book." So she uses a European badger family with each trying to get this large turnip out of the ground. And her illustrations just are feast for the eyes. You can spend a long time even extending the story that way of what do you see and what do your kids see. But you also can see her and hear about her work.
All right. So another one from Jan Brett. This one is The Turnip. And let's go to you, Kate. What do you have up next?
I have two books about bears. I absolutely love and adore bears. And so I actually had to weed out about, four other books about bears from my list this year. The first one is by Lizzie Boyd. It's called Big Bear and Little Chair. And it is a tall, skinny book, which just fits the book of opposites that it is. She uses bright red colors, blacks, whites, and grays throughout the entire book. And it is a story about Big Bear, Little Chair, and the encounters that they have of different animals along their journey. So, for example, you'll see on one page a big seal, a little castle, and a tiny, tiny bucket. Mm-hmm. Or the next page, a big ladder, a little turtle, reading a tiny, tiny book.
Oh, fun.
And it is just engaging and it's fun. And there's some rhyming. Kids will learn perspective, relative sizes, and they'll also laugh.
Well, and the illustrations look like they have a lot of that contrast that are so eye-catching, especially for little kids with the black and white and red. It looks beautiful.
Thank you. The other one is by Il-Sung Na. It's called Welcome Home Bear. It's a book about animal habitats. It's beautifully, beautifully illustrated. And every morning, Bear woke up in the same forest, under the same blue sky. And then one day he thought, I will find a new home. So he tries out different habitats, different homes. He climbs up to see Bird, but her nest was too high in the tree. He dug down to visit Mole, but it was stuffy underground and dirt got in his nose. And so it goes throughout the entire book until he finally finds the home that is his perfect home.
All right. So Welcome Home Bear, a book of animal habitats. Il-Sung Na. And the other one was Big Bear, Little Chair by Lizzie Boyd. And back to you, Barb.
The Day the Crayons Came Home is the second book by Drew DeWalt and illustrated by Oliver Jeffers. It is all the crayons that have been left behind, lost, broken, and this young child has not treated them very well. And one day, Duncan and his crayons, he gets a postcard arriving in the mail. And this one is, Dear Duncan, not sure if you remember me. My name is Maroon Crayon. You only colored with me once to draw a scab. But whatever. Anyway, you lost me 2 years ago on the couch, and then your dad sat on me and broke me in half. I never would have survived had Paperclip not nursed me back to health. I'm finally better, so come get me. And can Paperclip come too? He's really holding me together. Sincerely, your marooned crayon, Maroon Crayon. And so every illustration and postcard tells of something Duncan has done with that particular crayon and what their life is like. And Duncan has a great idea about how to mend his ways at the end, and just lovely illustrations. They're loads of fun.
Well, and the first one came out a couple of years ago, The Day the
Crayons Quit.
Which
yes.
Is this one as much fun as that
yes,
one?
Yes, it is. And lots of times sequels don't hold up, but this one does.
All right. The Day the Crayons Came Home?
Yes.
All right. By Drew DeWalt. And you have another one there, Barb?
I have this one. This is one that has just grown and grown on me. It's called Beep, Beep, Go to Sleep, written by Todd Tarpley. Illustrated by John Rocco. This little boy has three little robots. He's trying to get them to go to bed. Another feature of the illustration is a mouse who kind of joins in there. So, three little robots, time for bed, time to dim your infrared. Brush your rotors round and round, clean your shields, and power down. Well, of course, he's in for a challenge because once he gets them into their erector set, three-tiered bed, and everybody's ready to go to sleep, all of a sudden, beep, beep, and the robots turn the light back on. Is something wrong? I need my coil. My sensor aches. I want more oil. So he takes care of everybody. This happens three times, And finally, he thinks he's exhausted. He wants to go to sleep. And there they are. And what do they have? A big stack of books. What now? You need what? Oh, a bedtime story. So this one is another wonderful one of who got put to sleep. I love this. It's really, really a wonderful present.
And clearly that one reads on a couple of levels for the parents and for the kids as well. Beep, Beep, Go to Sleep by Todd Tarpley. And Kate, back to you.
I'm going to switch into transitional chapter books.
Okay.
These are the books for your reader, either a read with or read independently, depending upon how strong of a reader that they are. And one of our favorite author-illustrators has come out with his first transitional chapter book, and that is Mo Williams. You probably know Mo Williams from Elephant and Piggy or
the
Pigeon books. Well, now it is The Story of Diva and Flea. Set in Paris, Diva is a small, slightly pampered lap dog, and Flea is a stray cat. Diva, small yet brave, has lived in Paris as long as she could remember. She lived at 11 Avenue Le Play in Paris. And as long as he could remember, Flea also lived in Paris, but at no fixed address. Mm. When Flea flaneers past Diva's courtyard one day, their lives are forever changed. Together, Diva and Flea explore and share their very different worlds as only true friends can do. Absolutely love this book. In fact, I've read it myself 3 or 4 times. There's humor at all different levels, including the illustrations by Tony D. Terlizza. It's one of the first times that Mo Williams has done a book where he hasn't illustrated it, but the pairing is just wonderful together.
Well, I was wondering, I mean, when you were describing the story, it didn't necessarily sound funny, but it's Mo Williams, so it has to be funny,
yes,
right?
There's definitely humor in it.
All right.
I want to add something to that. Mo Williams is coming out, has just come out with a piggy in his slop trying to share it with Gerald, which is hilarious. And that's number 24, and there's only going to be one more Piggy and Gerald. 25, he's stopping. So.
Really? Oh, yeah. So we're almost done with the Piggy and Elephant books. Oh, that's been such a wonderful series and such a great one for learning readers. I find that's a series where, because of the way the words are printed on the paper, it's really easy to transition into picking out the words yourself and sounding them out.
I think to fill that gap, but also he is so tender and so funny. So I love that model. It's the best.
Absolutely. All right. And should we finish up your picture books?
I'll just mention Felix Stands Tall is Rosemary Wells' story about bullying, really. Felix has to learn to stand tall, his mother says. And he does it with the help of a friend, and he gets his power back, and that's pretty wonderful. And the other one is more serious. This is by Jonah Winter and Shane Evans, and I always love everything Jonah Winter does. And Lillian's Right to Vote. This is a celebration of the Civil Rights Act in 1965, and this author has picked a person who was over 100 when she finally voted. But what he does is he takes the whole history of African-American life about voting and uses the metaphor of going up the hill. Miss Lillian goes up the hill, and throughout her life, what has happened? So if you're trying to give older kids a little sense of what what has really happened in relation to voting rights, what a perfect year with the caucuses coming up and what it's really taken. And I think for adults, how important it is to vote. I mean, it's a wonderful testament to that.
And what kind of age group would you think would
enjoy that? I think probably because you have to have some sense of history. I would say 4th, 5th, 6th, you could use it for older kids too. There's certainly a lot of text here. This is a long, story, really. And so probably kids who have a little bit of a sense of history might be the better market for that one.
All right. And that one is Lillian's Right to Vote by Jonah Winter, a celebration of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And let's go back to you, Kate.
Again, in the transitional chapter book area, Kate DiCamillo, one of our beloved authors, has come out with a series that's an extension of her Mercy Watson series.
All right, which is all about a pig.
All about a pig.
A very funny pig.
Yeah. So her her series is the Dekawu Drives series, transitional chapter books, again illustrated by Chris Van Dusen's. Last year's, which may be picked up, was Leroy Ninker Saddles Up, which the most funniest part was that when Leroy was feeding his new horse spaghetti outside of his apartment. This year's is Francine Poulet meets the ghost raccoon. Francine Poulet is the best animal control expert in the city. And one day she was sitting at her desk and she answered the phone. She said, "Animal Control Officer Francine Poulet here. How may I help you?" "Yes, hello," said the voice at the other end. "Mrs. Bissinger speaking, and you maybe know of her from the Mercy Watson series." "I am being tormented. I am being tormented by a raccoon. He shimmers. He seems to glow. In addition, more disturbingly, this raccoon calls my name."
Uh-oh.
And you're off and running to find out, can the raccoon be controlled or does the raccoon control everybody else?
All right. Francine Poulet meets the ghost raccoon. Tales from Dekawu Drive, Volume 2. And Barb?
This is a series I had not been familiar with. This is book two I'm talking about today, called James to the Rescue. It's by Elise Broach, and it's the series is called The Masterpiece Adventures. I think a couple of things drew me to this. One is Marvin is a beetle, and he's getting to go collecting with his beetle family to find discarded items that they can put to good use. Well, the beetles all live in the cupboard. And off they go with a bag that they have absconded from the mother of the house to put their finds in. Well, Marvin has made good friends with James, a real boy. And off they go through the house. And the text is very large. So early readers, maybe before they're ready for Magic Treehouse, that kind of thing. Lots of white space, darling illustrations. And anyway, the uncle gets stabbed by the scissors they find. And, of course, Marvin decides he has to ask James, the boy who's reading on his bed, for some help. And if you love The Borrowers, this would be a prequel to The Borrowers. That's an old book about the people living in the walls who steal postage stamps and things from the human family.
And also like the Littles.
Yes, Littles. And yeah, it's exactly that kind of idea, but very charming and funny. And I think kids will like that a lot.
All right. James to the Rescue by Elise Broach. And back to you, Kate.
My next one is The Princess in Black and the Perfect Princess Party. And it is written by a husband and wife team, Shannon and Dean Hale. If your young reader hasn't already become a fan of the royal monster vanquisher Princess in Black, or PIB as we call it in the shop, they'll certainly love being introduced to her. Princess Magnolia returns in this year's sequel, The Princess in Black and the Perfect Princess Party. When Shannon and Dean Hale were talking about where they came up with the idea, they said, "Sometimes our daughters wear princess dresses and play tea party. And sometimes they don capes and fight monsters. We wanted to write a character who does both." And my daughters are now 23 and 25, but they certainly fit into this category of wanting to be sparkly princesses one minute and
ninjas the next.
And in the Princess in Black and the Perfect Princess Party, it's Princess Magnolia's birthday party, and she wants everything to be perfect. Then her guests arrive. Bring, bring, but the monster alarm. She runs, ditches her frilly clothes, and becomes the Princess in Black. She rushes to goat pastures, defeats monsters, and returns to the castles before her guests can discover her secret. But every time Princess Magnolia is about to open her presents, the monster alarm rings again. And every time she rushes back, an inside-out dress here, a missing shoe there, it gets harder and harder to keep the other princesses from being suspicious. Don't those monsters understand that now is not a good time for an attack?
Oh, that sounds
just
like
a fun story.
And so that's the second book in this series.
That's correct.
So If that's something that the child in your life would get excited about, you can give them too, right?
That's
The Princess
right.
in Black and The Perfect Princess Party by Shannon and Dean Hale. And back to you, Barb.
My one today is Cornelia Funke. Ruffleclaw is the name, and you can see by the cover there's a big red monster. He's been living under the tool shed in his family's home, and he's gotten quite tired of eating bugs and grubs. Goodbye, earthworms. Hello, chocolate cake. Now he decides that he's going to go into the human's home, and he climbs right into bed with a boy named Tommy. Well, they get along quite well, and Tommy is going to try to convince his parents that he can keep Ruffleclaw as a pet. Unfortunately, he drinks shampoo, he eats everything in the fridge, he spits, he even eats the plates, he eats all these things, he ruins the piano. So whether or not Tommy can really make that monster behave is a real trick and convince his parents that it could be all right. Other books by this author have been Emma and the Blue Genie and The Pirate Pig, always with great humor and interesting things that you don't see other places. The readability on this one is more like Magic Treehouse.
Okay. All right. That one is Cornelia Funke or Funky. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Ruffleclaw, her latest. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Books in Iowa City is here. Kate Rattenborg of Dragonfly Books in Decorah. We've been talking about transitional chapter books, and we'll talk about books for a little older readers as we go on as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the best new books for kids this holiday season. And of course, we'll put this entire list up on our website, iowapublicradio.org, later on today. With me today, Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kate Rattenborg of Dragonfly Books in Decorah. And we've been talking about these transitional chapter books, which is such an important segment of reading because it's that sort of crucial time when your child transitions to reading on their own. And you have just one more of those left that you want to mention, Barb?
I did. I wanted to mention Hilo by Judd Winnick. This is a graphic novel. And if those are so popular for all ages, really starting for very young now. And it's cartoons, if you don't know what those are. It's a cartoon or comic-like story. But much longer in this case. Hilo doesn't know where he comes from. He lands on Earth. He makes a good friend, but he, of course, has no idea how to act on Earth. And he is going to survive his first day at school and so on. But he's also trying to figure out what he's doing here. It turns out he's being chased. He needs good friends to help him out of his predicament. So it's very active, very bright colored, and loads of fun.
All right. And that one is Hilo 1. So this is looks like it's going to be a series,
yeah,
right? The Boy Who Crashed to Earth by Judd Winnick. And Kate, you have another transitional book, too?
This one, it is transitional, but it also can go up to grades 1 to 3.
Okay.
It's called How to Hug an Elephant, and it's the sixth book in the Here's Hank series. And it's written by collaborators Henry Winkler and Lynn Oliver.
Is that the Henry Winkler?
Yes, it is the Henry Winkler.
The Fonz himself, all right?
Yes. This series excels at engaging struggling readers. One of the strengths of the books in the Here's Hank series is that they are designed using the font Dyslexie. Dyslexie was designed by a Dutch graphic designer, Christian Baer, and he developed the font specifically for dyslexic readers. The font is designed to make the letters more distinct from one another and to keep them tied down, so to speak, so that the readers are less likely to flip them in their minds.
Huh.
The letters in their font are also spaced wide apart to make reading them easier. Dyslexie has characteristics that make it easier for people with dyslexia to distinguish and not jumble, invert, or flip the letters, such as there's heavier bottoms on both the B and the D, there's larger than normal openings on the C's and the E's, and there's longer ascenders and descenders on the F, H's, and P's. Not a single letter is a mirror image of another one in this font. I found when I first started reading the series, and obviously, it's not the first year that the series is out, but Hug an Elephant is just an amazing book. my eyes slowed down for the very first page or two, and then all of a sudden I settled into that new font, and it was amazing. It's really, really truly.
Even if your child does not have dyslexic tendencies, this would be an easier transition.
It's a fun-looking font. It helps all kids, not just those that are dyslexic.
All right. And you said this one's so fun. Can you jump in the middle of the series, or would you go back and start at the beginning?
You can jump in anywhere. Hank, most likely, probably a little bit like Henry Winkler was as a kid, is one of those kids that tries his hardest, but just no matter what happens, he turns left instead of right. When he's working on his report from going to the zoo, which they went to in How to Hug an Elephant, where he did get lost and ended up with an elephant for a greater part of the time in the elephant's cage. When he's writing the report, he can't think of the words, and he just keeps erasing and ends up with a hole in the middle of his report of his page. And when the teacher looks at his edit, she says, "Hank, there's nothing but a big hole in the middle of the page." "I know. That's where all the thoughts fell through. They went right down that hole and into the carpet in my bedroom. But luckily for all of us, I still have them here in my mind." And they're just fun, fun stories.
Oh, that's fun. So that's the Here's Hank series. This is number 6, Henry Winkler, Lynn Oliver, and Scott Garrett. And so we're moving on into books for older readers or nonfiction?
Well,
or both.
Maybe both. I have some biography and nonfiction, and I think what I'll do is just highlight one of the biographies because some teachers might be listening and parents who have inventive children. The Inventor's Secret: What Thomas Edison Told Henry Ford. The author is Suzanne Slade, but the illustrator is Jennifer Black Reinhardt. She lives here in Iowa City, and I know for a fact she's got 2 more books coming out pretty soon. So the illustrations are very notable. They extend the biography very much. And mostly what it is the whole time Henry Ford is working on his cars and Thomas Edison is working on all of his devices. They're just feeling like, Thomas Edison is feeling kind of discouraged. When they finally do meet, Henry Ford says, "Keep at it." And that's something that stuck. And they eventually became very good friends. They even live next door to each other. So if you have someone looking for inspiration to just keep at it, that's a good message there.
All right. The Inventor's Secret by Suzanne Slade with illustrations by Jennifer Black Reinhardt. And are we back to you, Kate?
Yes. Coming off of that Inventor's, I have a book. It's the first in the series. It's the Wollstonecraft Detective Agency. And number one is The Case of the Missing Moonstone by Jordan Stratford. And there is some illustrations, Kelly Murphy. It is a book for grades 3 to 7, ages 8 to 12. Author Jordan Stratford imagines an alternate 1826 where Ada Byron Lovelace, the world's first computer programmer, and Mary Godwin Shelley, who's the author of Frankenstein, the first science fiction book, meet as girls and form a secret detective agency.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. Ada Byron is a genius, slightly awkward, a bit rude. And Mary Godwin, her friend, is a romantic. And the two of them together decide that they're going to solve mysteries. Mm-hmm. Think about them kind of as a fresh and funny version of Holmes and Watson for middle grade readers.
Oh, fun. All right. The Case of the Missing Moonstone. So again, this one's going to be a series, Jordan Stratford and Kelly Murphy. And back to you, Barb.
I'm going to do a Nicola Davies book called I Don't, and Don't has got a big black scratch through it, like snakes. And this is a nonfiction book, and the little girl is saying, "How come everybody likes snakes? I don't." And the family says, "Why not?" And every time she gives a reason, they slither. Then her mother says, "Snakes have to slither." And there's a whole description and then real information about different ways that snakes slither. And it goes through all the myths of people who hate snakes and why they do what they do. And she finally decides she can scratch out that "I don't like snakes."
All right. So this is a little bit of propaganda for pro-snake propaganda.
Yes.
Love it.
Love it.
All right. I Don't Like Snakes by Nicola Davies. And do you have another one?
I do. I want to tell you about Finding Winnie and Winnie, two that came out exactly at the same time, the true story of the world's most famous bear. One is by Lindsay Matic, and the other is by Sally M. Walker. So this is really the story of an animal vet who lived in Winnipeg, and in World War I time, he is called to come help with the horses in the war. So he travels across Canada on a train. At one of the stations, he sees a trapper sitting with a bear, and he offers to buy the bear for $20. When he finally ships out, he takes that bear, and the bear kind of becomes a mascot. I mean, everybody helps take care of it.
Is this a living bear?
A living bear cub. And he takes it to London, and of course, they're training on the Salisbury Plains. And by that time, you know, Winnie is sleeping under his cot, and everyone is helping out when they need to feed Winnie and take care of this wonderful bear. He realizes when he gets called to France that he cannot take Winnie into battle, and that he must be really working on his veterinary skills. So he gives Winnie to the London Zoo, and the London Zoo takes very good care of Winnie. And one day, A.A. Milne brings Christopher Robin to meet the bear, and they become great friends. And so you have in this book not only the story of how Winnie the Pooh became Winnie the Pooh, but you also have gorgeous old photographs of the zoo and the bear and A.A. Milne and Christopher Robin. And I know many of you love the Winnie the Pooh books as much as I. So both are on the bibliography. I guess I need both of them.
All right. You need to have both of them this holiday season. So Finding Winnie, the true story of the world's most famous bear by Lindsay Matic, and then Winnie, the true story of the bear who inspired Winnie the Pooh by Sally Walker. And you need both. All right. Back to you, Kate.
One of our favorite authors for historical fiction up in Northeast Iowa is Margie Preuss. She's an author of two stories that are set in Norway, which, if you don't know, decor is very Scandinavian. Both for grades 5 to 9 are West of the Moon and Shadow on the Mountain. She received a Newbery Honor for her first longer novel, Heart of a Samurai. And this year's release, The Bamboo Sword, is a follow-up to Heart of the Samurai. It is set in 1853 in Japan, right at the time when the U.S. is coming to Japan and demanding diplomatically that Japan open its ports to foreign trade. The novel follows Yoshi, a Japanese boy who dreams of someday becoming a samurai. However, he's part of the serving class, and so Yoshi can never really truly become a warrior, even though he's practicing not with a real sword, but with a stick of bamboo that he uses. He's taken under Manjiro's wing, and Manjiro, if you've read Heart of the Samurai, is the protagonist in that book. Yoshi becomes Manjiro's servant and his secret watchdog. And another part of the story is there's Jack, who is on the U.S. ships that are coming in part of Japanese Bay. And so Jack and Yoshi end up crossing paths. They set off on grand, grand adventures, trying to get Jack back to his ship before he is discovered by the samurai.
So historical fiction, a cross-cultural adventure.
Yes.
All right. That sounds like fun. The Bamboo Sword. And we have not very long left, so we need to be brief in our descriptions. What do you want to talk about next, Barb?
My last nonfiction is called Bedtime Math, The Truth Comes Out. If you haven't seen these for your children, and that can be preschool through for second grade, maybe even third, this is a mom who discovered that doing math problems that are really fun is just as much fun as a bedtime story and just as much necessary for problem solving. This has a very funny little narrative. This is the problem about all kinds of everyday life. And then there's a question for the wee ones, the little kids, the big kids, and a bonus. Really, families adore these, and there's a website for more of them. and more of the problems, and you can submit your own problems that your family came up with. Very interactive and very wonderful for math.
All right, so a new edition in the Bedtime Math series, and the truth comes out. This one's called Back to You, Kate.
Another cross-cultural book is Look Both Ways in the Barrio Blanco by Judith Robbins Rose.
And so, this one with 10 and up?
Yeah, 10 and up, grades 5 and up. It is set in Colorado. It's a story of a Mexican girl who has who was actually born in the U.S., but her parents were illegal immigrants to the U.S. With humor and sensitivity, it talks about how a girl is caught between two different cultures, and she tries to find the courage to forge her own destiny between the bridge between the culture of her parents, which is Mexican, and the culture of and then her white friend who has befriended her and shown her what she can do in an American life.
Interesting. All right. Look Both Ways in the Barrio Blanco by Judith Robbins Rose. Barb?
I have another cross-cultural one that's very interesting called The Green Bicycle. And some of you may have seen Haifa al-Mansour's movie about this little girl who lives in Saudi Arabia. She really, really, really wants a bicycle. She is probably not supposed to ride a bicycle. And she goes to an all-girls school. There are many rules. She's a little bit of a rebel. She's very funny and very creative. And this story tells how she goes about trying to realize her dream. And I think it gives a real sense of what things are very much the same about a kid, no matter where they live, kind of just dispels some
mythology. And that one looks thick, probably, again, grade 5.
This is
and
5 up. Through 8, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, all right, we have time for one more pick, or you can just say them really fast. But, Kate?
Okay. Lizard Radio by Wisconsin writer Pat Schmatz is for grades 9 and up. It's dystopian. It's the most science fiction, fantasy-related on my list. Complex, beautifully rendered tale of the search for identity in a slightly futuristic world where identity is highly regulated.
All right. Lizard Radio by Pat Schmatz and Barb.
I have Finding Fortune by Delia Ray. Delia's presentation told us about how she put her research about the Muscatine button factories that used to be the biggest in the world and puts it together with another story about small Iowa towns. This is a mystery, a coming of age. It's called Finding Fortune, and it's about treasures lost and found, personally and real treasures. And I have to do one more. This is Ash and Bramble by Sarah Prineas. She also works at Prairie Lights. This is the Cinderella story, feminist version, very exciting, ways that you won't believe what happens, and you can get an autograph copy if you come down to the store.
All right, and you were so fast that, Kate, you can mention one more. Oh, and I threw you off there. Okay, Barb, go quickly, and then Kate can throw another title in there.
All right, historical fiction, The Hired Girl by Laura Amy Schlitz is about a girl in Pennsylvania whose father does not want her to be educated. It's 1911. She runs away. She gets hired by a very wealthy Jewish family. And learns a lot about life, makes a lot of mistakes, but she does it in diary form. And it's at times hilarious and gripping, really wonderful.
All right. The Hired Girl by Amy
Again,
Laura
5
Schlitz.
5 through 8 or 9.
All right. And Kate, your final one.
Wonder at the Edge of the World by Minnesota writer Nicole Helgett. It's a captivating story about hallelujah wonder. A heroine following in the steps of Charlotte Doyle, Caddy Woodlon, and Calpurnia Tate. Right. Story about family, loyalty, and friendships.
So a heroic young woman. All right. Wonder at the Edge of the World by Nicole Helgett. And we are out of time, but we will put the entire list, even the ones we didn't have time for, up on our website later today at iowapublicradio.org. Kate Rattenborg, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me here.
Kate Rattenborg of Dragonfly Books in Decorah. And Barb Stein, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Barb Stein of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.